Barbara Walraff is the Atlantic Monthly's Miss Manners of Grammar. A senior editor at the magazine, she also writes a regular column in which she both humorously and tactfully answers readers' questions about English grammar and word usage. Now she's collected the best of the columns in her new book, Word Court. In the book, you'll finally learn the difference between nauseated and nauseous, whether it's okay to sometimes split infinitives, and how to use the word like correctly. Terry Gross spoke with Barbara Walraff recently about working with writers at The Atlantic and dealing with her readers' queries about English grammar.
You once got a letter about a sentence that you'd written, and the sentence was, "This isn't something that we can blame President Clinton for." What was the reader's problem with your sentence?
It's that old preposition at the end, the thing. And people who care about language learned from their English teacher who cared about language, learned from her English teacher who cared about language that you're not supposed to put prepositions at the ends of sentences. But if you trace this back to where it came from, it had to do with what was good sentence structure in Latin. And there are a million situations in which the natural way to write that sentence, to say that thing, has a preposition at the end of it. There were a lot of people kind of in support of what I was saying about prepositions at the end were telling me about Winston Churchill's famous remark when somebody had changed a preposition at the end of one of his sentences. That is something up with which I will not put. And that sentence certainly does a good job of telling you that putting the preposition out of the end position does not make a sentence sound better or more natural.
So this all dates back to Latin, huh?
Well, some of it does. There are a lot of bits and pieces of our language that are from Latin. There are a lot of strictures that grammarians have been handing down that have to do with Latin, like the rule about not splitting infinitives. Splitting infinitives is something that you could not do in Latin because the infinitive was one word. So at some point, someone thought it would be a good idea to say that we shouldn't split infinitives in English.
There's a few usage things that really constantly baffle me. And like when to use that and when to use which. And I've even read usage books about this, and I find that within several days, I've forgotten whatever it is I have learned about that and which.
Oh, Terry, did you read my, is it 3 or 4 pages on that topic?
Yeah, so summarize like how we should deal with that and which for us.
Well, the phrase that everybody tells you, and it comes from the elements of style, is the lawnmower that's in the garage versus the lawnmower, which is in the garage. The lawnmower that's in the garage kind of implies that there are other lawnmowers, and I'm talking to you about the one that's in the garage. But if I say the lawnmower, which is in the garage, that implies that there is one lawnmower, and I'm just happening to tell you where it is.
Well, you make it sound simple.
Is this doing it for you?
Yeah, that's very good. And then it's a question of remembering which is which. How about different from and different than? Which is correct?
Well, the simple answer about different from and different than is just that different from is standard American English and different than is arguable. You should try, if you can, to put together a construction that uses different from. And if you absolutely can't, if you end up with something like, this word has a meaning different from that which I thought it had, and you just absolutely wince at a point like that, you're allowed to head for this word has a meaning different than I thought.
You write in your book that you're concerned with what you describe as durable usage. What do you mean by that?
The first thing you see when you walk into the Atlantic Monthly's offices is a wall of Atlantics stretching back to volume 1 1857, and you can pull one of those old books off the shelf and begin reading excerpts from a novel by Henry James or something by Walt Whitman or something by Henry David Thoreau, and suddenly you are transported into the mind of a person who lived 140 years ago. To me, that is a really magical thing about language, that you know what somebody else is thinking, and we mess up our ability to understand what people were thinking the more we allow language to change freely. And I wouldn't say that there aren't new words like to fax or to rollerblade that we need, because there weren't fax machines in Thoreau's day. But where we have thoughts that remain pretty much the same, or things that remain the same, keeping the words that refer to them the same, so that we will be able to understand, so that people in the future will be able to understand us as well as we can understand people from the fairly remote past. If you go back and look at Chaucer, you can barely follow that at all. And it's because language has changed so much since that point. So I really believe in trying to keep language similar to the way it was 50 years ago, and hope that it'll stay similar 50 years from now so that people will be able to understand us.
Do you find that younger people in particular are always objecting to certain rules of grammar because either they didn't learn them or they found them too complicated, and they think, why bother? What, people will understand me. What's the difference?
Well, and we all have dialects, or we all have ways of talking that we use with our friends when we're in private context. Every little subculture has its own little aspects of language that are private, but there is a public language, and it is standard English. It's the language that sort of the leaders of everything throughout America speak. And it's nice to have both. It's nice to have your own way of speaking in your own community and a common way of speaking that we can all share.
As somebody who speaks live or live on tape on the radio, I wonder if you think that speech should be treated differently than writing when it comes to the rules of grammar. In other words, should I be allowed to get away with a little bit more than the writers in the Atlantic? Because they can write and they can edit themselves. They have you to edit them afterwards. Whereas I'm just talking as I'm thinking out loud.
Well, on the one hand, you're absolutely right. I think that every writer needs an editor, and that we all write things that we think we haven't put well and have a chance to revise, and comes out a lot better. And if I'm doing a book signing or an event like that, I like to do some reading and some regular speaking, because I think you can see the difference in the forms of language by that. But on the other hand, I have to tell you that I get a lot of letters from people who are annoyed when people like you, who are paid to speak, don't speak properly. And the feeling is that if this is your job, you should do it well. So I'm not sure everyone is willing to grant you extra leeway.
Well, that does seem fair. If it's your job, you should do it well. It is a good point.
You're doing beautifully. You are.
Do people get nervous when they talk to you? Do they get nervous about their grammar and start correcting themselves mid-sentence?
They do. I'm really sorry about that. Then I'll have to say something egregious just to calm them down.
How do you think you learned grammar? Did you have particularly good teachers when you were young? Do you think you just were particularly interested in it or had a good ear for it, the way musicians have a good ear for music?
It all started when I was very small, and my father would correct my grammar and correct my pronunciation the word is not comfortable, but comfortable, things like that. I realized when I became a young adult, when I went off to college, I'd come home and maybe I'd borrow a novel from the bookshelf to take back on the plane with me. I realized he was a little more that way than most people because all the typos would be neatly corrected in the margin. And the first time a character was referred to, if the character's name was John and the author didn't tell you the character's last name, there'd be a little asterisk by John's name, and down at the bottom of the page, the last name of the character would appear and a page reference for where it first was. So being very careful about language and having a lot of respect for words was something that I was just brought up in.
Didn't it irritate you when your father would correct your grammar or your pronunciation?
I don't really think so. I loved my father, and it was part of his teaching me how to be a proper adult.
Do writers ever take it personally when you make a change in a sentence?
Sometimes they do, but you try to make it clear to them that it's not meant as a personal thing. And if you don't put your work in terms of, I changed your sentence because I like my version better, but put it in terms of, well, here, see what you think. There was a sentence, confronted with the lack of sure knowledge, many assume that they are being manipulated for devious political reasons. And you think about that sentence, and you know what it means, but I changed it to, uncertainty makes many people mistrustful. And the writer, too, can see that that's a lot easier of a thought to get your mind around.
It's both clearer and more graceful.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Can you edit yourself as well as you edit other people?
I like to think I can. There is a period, for me, there's a period when I've written something that I feel like a writer about it. If I can wait for a few days or weeks or months, I can look at it again. And I did have the opportunity with the Word Court book to look at the manuscript some months later. There it was in galleys. It wasn't even in my own typescript. And I found that there were places where I was able to be my own editor, and I like to think help myself a lot. I think, oh, wait a minute, I forgot to make that point. So if given time, I can do both things. And I do think I'm a better editor than I am a writer, so it's helpful.
Well, Barbara Walrath, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Barbara Walrath is a senior editor at Atlantic Monthly. Her new book is Word Court. Coming up, Milo Miles on the secrecy surrounding world musicians who have died of AIDS. This is Fresh Air.